Good morning. Welcome and thank you for coming to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whoever you love, we welcome you and we're glad that you are here today. I'm joined today by our interim minister, Reverend Anya Johnson, Hal Walker, our director of music, and Lily Rappaport, our director of RE education.
Please join me in reading these chalice lighting words in the order of service. We light this chalice, symbol of all that we are, all that we have done together, and all that we will be as we live into our identity as one human family and one interdependent web.
Said that ministers are here to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I say we are all afflicted and we are all comfortable. May our time together this morning be a comfort and a confrontation. May we here find peace in times of turmoil. May we here invite turmoil into the lives of peace. May we here find calm in times of restlessness. May we here allow restlessness to evolve into action. Let this be the place you consider what you've never considered, and let this be the place you imagine for yourself something new and unthinkable. May this hour bring dreams of new ways of being in this world. Come, let us worship together.
So I saw this on my windowsill today, and I didn't know what it was. Anyone have a guess? A chicken? Yeah, it's actually a male chicken, so it's a rooster. And I need some help with the story today. I need 7 volunteers. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, come on up here. And I'll give you your parts. This has not been rehearsed yet, so. So I think I'm going to tell a story about a rooster, and I have some different parts. I need a few more. Yeah, come on up. And if you would, line up, all right? So we'll make you kind of neat. 1, 2, who's got 3? Okay, stand over here, 4. Okay, great. We got just the right amount, all right? So you have to really remember what your animals are. And you know what? When you're standing up here, hold it like this. All right, and then hold it like this, all right, so you can see what we're doing, all right? So today's story is the rooster who learned how to crow. There was a farm in a valley that was practically perfect in every way, except there was no rooster to crow at the crack of dawn. So everyone was always running late, getting out of bed. The dog was late going out to fetch the newspaper for the farmer, and the farmer was late to milk the cows before the sun came up. And the cows were late to graze on the grass because in the morning, and they missed the morning dew, when that's when the taste of the grass is tastiest. And everyone was always late on that farm, and so everyone was always cranky. They were always cranky in the morning, and sometimes that crankiness lasted the entire day. Until one day, a chicken arrived to the farm. And everyone was really excited because the chicken had 4 little chicks coming behind him. And the pig, who was always exceptionally polite, said, "Pardon me, Mrs. Chicken, but do you happen to have one of those chickens who are male chickens who are rooster?" And she said, "Well, yes. That one, the one all the way at the end, is my son, and he's going to grow up to be a rooster." So everyone was really very excited, and they waited and waited for the little chickies to grow up. So the little furry yellow chickies turned up to be, with little legs, turned out to be bigger and bigger little furry chicken yellow chickies with long legs. And one day, the rooster was looking mighty fine. He had long tails, and he had those cock bells on top, the red ones. And the pig said to him, "So, little rooster, you look like you're looking mighty fine today." And the rooster said, "Yeah, thank you very much." And then he kind of drooped down and walked away. His head was down. And the rooster said, and his friends, the pig said, "Oh, what's wrong?" And then by this time, some of the friends had gathered around. And the rooster kind of confided, "Well, you know, everyone's waiting for me to wake them up in the morning. And, you know, quite honestly, I don't know what to do. I've never really seen a rooster wake people up in the morning. We have to, I don't know how to say cock-a-doodle-doo." All right, so his friends, the pig said, who's very wise, said, "Well, you know what we'll do is we'll help you." And the pig said to the duck, "You go first. Can you show the rooster how to crow?"
"Quack, a whack, a whack, a whack."
Okay, so it wasn't really so good. And the oink said, and the pig said, "Well, wait, you have to have some attitude with it. So you got to crawl up to the top of the mound. You know, I can't get up the tree, but you have to get up really high and stick your head up and belt out." It's your part. Can you help her? We can all help her, okay? Snuffle. Oink. Snort. Right. Okay. Well, you know, you did a good job, but Maybe, you know, maybe we can get a chicken to come do it, okay? Because chickens are very close, right? So what does a chicken say?
Chick, a chick, a chick, a chick.
All right. Cluck, 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 right? Okay. Oh, boy. And then the cat says, you know, I can do it. I have attitude. So the cat went up to the top, climbed up on the top of the tree, and stuck out her head and face. And what did she say?
Meow, 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 meow.
Oh, dear. The rooster was looking really, really alarmed and said, okay.
Bow, 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 bow.
Okay. And the rooster said, you know, I'll never, ever learn how to do it. Oh, maybe the dog will help me. And the dog went up, and what did the dog say? We could all help you.
Oof,
oof, oof. Oof. Oh. So then the friend said, you know, why don't you try it? And the rooster said, well, I can't do it. I can't try it. So we're going to have everybody help be the rooster. Okay, you stand up. You open your mouth. Well, you can sit down, do it, okay? And what does the rooster say?
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
All right, first it was kind of soft, and then he tried it again. And what did he say?
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
And then one last time, because he felt so good saying it, cock-a-doodle-doo. Okay. Thank you very much. We're not done yet, but you could put your, you can put the animals down. You can go back, sit down. Yeah. Great job. Yeah, let's give them a round of applause. And the story ends that there was once a farm in the valley that was practically perfect in every way. They had a fine young rooster who every morning would wake them up with a cock-a-doodle-doo at the crack of dawn, and so everyone always got out of bed exactly at the right time. The dog always ran out and fetched the paper at the right time. He brought it to the farmer. The farmer was up early and milked the cows in time before the sun rose, and the cows were always out in the eating up the grass when the dew was on the grass, and that's when it tasted at its finest. And everyone was perfectly happy. Everyone was wide awake on that farm because they had a rooster whose friends helped him learn how to crow.
There's a moment when the young people leave the room. It's like an exhale. Just exhale with me, please. Just recognize the beauty and the energy of youth and the joy and the trepidation when they have to be up here. It's a rich part of life. And when we come together in prayer, we have one function to recognize the beauty in life. And the young people often are our best representation of beauty and joy. We also open our hearts to the pain in the world, the suffering, as well as the joy and the celebration. Today, I'll share some news of concern from members of the congregation, and I'll ask you to hold them in your hearts for a couple minutes of silence. Then it will be followed by a little more prayer of a more general nature as we open our hearts further. Merrily Ash had a sibling die this week and asked for prayers for their safe journey forward. I hear that Kiara Fitzgerald, who is Marion Yeagler's granddaughter, has such a severe ear infection that she had to go to the hospital. And I just met Eric Van Bars, who is back and really thankful for prayers, and Eric is very glad to be back in church. Please hold a moment of silence with me. I will mind the time. Reach deeper into your heart as we exit the silence and re-enter the busyness of life. Know that when we pray, we change the world. But we only change it by changing ourselves. and letting ourselves grow and feel more and deeper. Let us fill ourselves with compassion and caring for other humans who have the same needs and hurts and feelings and joys as we do. Let us always remember that everyone we meet is tender, and everyone we meet is strong. Let's go into the world being tender enough to feel with others, being strong enough to strengthen the world. Amen.
Thank you, Hal. For the next few minutes, I want you to come with me on a journey. I want you to open your minds to a new concept, a new way of looking. Our title today is called Spiritual Entrepreneurs. And I came across this this past week when I saw an image on the internet. And it was an ad from Radio Shack of the 1980s. And it featured this page of electronic items that were available at the time they were trying to sell cassette recorders, telephones, cameras, AM/FM radios, compasses, alarm clocks, etc. And the caption made the point that these items, everything advertised on the entire page, are now merged into one device that we call the iPhone. And I found it to be kind of funny and also amazing reminder of about the power of innovation and how entrepreneurial spirit can change the world and make it easier, more efficient, and more enjoyable. Just think for a moment upon the many devices and gadgets, both machines that we enjoy today, and realize these all came about by someone who first had an idea, develop that idea, and then help to shape that dream into a reality. And of course, the name that we have for these type of people is entrepreneurs. Richard Branson, the owner of the CEO of the Virgin Group and Virgin Atlantic Airlines, a true entrepreneur, defined what it means to be an entrepreneur. And Branson's definition simply states, being an entrepreneur simply means being someone who wants to make a difference to other people's lives. What I love about this definition is that you don't have to own or run a business to be an entrepreneur. And what this definition, people like Mother Teresa was indeed an entrepreneur. The key words are make a difference in other people's lives. So using Branson's definition for what an entrepreneur is, I'd like to add a new concept to the word entrepreneur. That word is spiritual. Now, what do I mean by a spiritual entrepreneur? Being a spiritual entrepreneur is having your inner spirit work through you in this world. Your motivation originates from an act of love and compassion. And there's no thought of what's in it for me. Some of the fundamental questions spiritual entrepreneurs are motivated by are, how can I improve the lives of others? How can I ease suffering? How can I create beauty? One of my all-time favorite spiritual entrepreneurs is the late Buckminster Fuller. And Fuller was an inventor, an author, a speaker, a philosopher, an architect, and much more. And he was a true generalist. He wrote over 20 books in his lifetime, and he toured the globe for over 20 years, giving lectures on how to improve the world. He had a deep understanding of God and his relationship in the universe that we inhabited. And at an early age, after losing a young daughter to an illness, he decided he would commit himself to seeing what one man could do on behalf of all humanity. For the rest of his life, he committed himself to making a difference to other people's lives. In my own family, I only need to look to my mother for an understanding of what it means to be a spiritual entrepreneur. My mom was a dietitian, and she worked with many individuals daily who required special diets and meals that would provide them what they needed on a nutritional basis. And she recognized that when many of these people left the hospital where she was caring for them, they went home, and many of them had no one to provide for them. No proper diet to make sure that they were receiving it. And many of them would leave the hospital and come back in less than 30 days with their nutritional issues not being recognized. And so my mom believed there had to be a better way to care for them. And she and three other dietitians looked at what they could do to improve the lives of others, to ease their suffering, create a caring spiritual moment in their lives. And it was from their pondering and risk-taking and organizing that the concept of Meals on Wheels was born. Being a young child of the 60s, I watched my mom's idea grow and blossom into where today almost every community has a Meals on Wheels program. I see my mom as a spiritual entrepreneur because she strived to make a difference in other people's lives. Now think for a moment of the people in your life, past, present, who you believe did what they could do to make a difference in your life and in other people's lives. What were or are some of their characteristics? Just what does spiritual entrepreneurship look like? You know, I can't speak for them, but I can speak from my own personal experience of working with leaders in the community and working with leaders in Unitarian Universalist churches. I found three qualities that I think I would attribute to these people that I call spiritual entrepreneurs. Number one, they think big. They dream of what could be and not what is. They see an opportunity in every obstacle. For example, they don't let small thinking happen. And such is the case of Sil Knutson. You know, Sil Knutson and I were called before I went into the ministry to be the co-chairman of the capital campaign for West Shore, which is my home congregation. And when we started planning for the capital campaign, many church members made statements like, well, we'll never raise enough money. We can't possibly redo this sanctuary. It's going to cost millions of dollars. Why don't we just try and do the painting? Or why don't we try and do maybe just the carpeting? And as objections arose, and as people began to wonder and ponder, Seale was very good about taking every obstacle and turning it into an opportunity. And never always thinking big, thinking of what it could be and what could we have. And her dream is now unfolding. In the next few months, West Shore Unitarian Church will begin the renovations on their sanctuary, having all funds raised and paid for and in the bank. Number two, spiritual entrepreneurs see abundance, not scarcity. Giving a struggling church $10,000, and they'll think they're broke and need to conserve it. But to a spiritual entrepreneur, it's a start, and they'll see it as seed money to start something big. The same facts, different mindset. Attitude really is everything. I saw this type of thinking from a leadership of a small UU church in the Cleveland area. For years, the church membership had been declining, and the members were getting older. A challenge that their building presented was that it was not very accessible for members who had mobility issues. You had to enter the building on the ground floor, walk upstairs to where the sanctuary was. And so a dedicated group of visionary leaders saw that the way to resolve the mobility issue was to install an elevator in the building. And so the plans were drawn up, and the group launched a fundraising drive. Now, when I asked them, well, how are you going to do this? You're declining membership. You're not a wealthy congregation. But one of the things that this group of spiritual entrepreneurs responded with was, and I've never forgotten this, and he says, we're not quite sure how we're going to do this, but we're just going to do it. And they didn't think as if they were a struggling church and think about all the reasons why they had no money or how they were going to, as a congregation, afford this, but instead they thought of the possibilities of the bigger picture. Within a few months, they raised the funds. In a few matter of short weeks, the elevator was installed. Number three, spiritual entrepreneurs think vision first and then resources second. And spiritual entrepreneurs are very comfortable with the reality that vision precedes resources. So they cast a big vision, often leading to significant resources down the road. I know this to be true in my life. In September of 2013, when I had received the call to go into the ministry, I found myself wondering, okay, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to do this? And so my vision that I had, knowing full well that I needed to go into the seminary, I was faced with, I owned a business. Where was I going to go? Where was the money going to come from? But in my mind, I knew that I had to do this, and I cast a vision. In these past 3 years, my vision of ministry has kept me going, and the resources have come along, and along with them, challenges and opportunities. And the one thing that I've learned is that in casting my vision and going for it, I've had no guarantees, because anytime you risk, it doesn't always bring a guarantee. And I've learned to be okay with that. But it's been a wonderful journey, and at times it has felt worthwhile, and at other times I've wondered, you know, what was I thinking? But the one thing that has remained constant through these past years is my desire to help people and to make a difference. And so I ask you, are you ready to become a spiritual entrepreneur? In the business world, we have an overriding metric for entrepreneurial success. Simple, one word, money. But the evolution of the iPhone from an entire store of individual items into one easy-to-use handheld device is deemed a success because it generated a lot of money. But spirituality is different. We don't have many defined spiritual metrics in a larger sense. We might not even know what we're searching for in our spiritual lives. While business is a venture in making money, spirituality can be about many different pursuits. Think about it. Love, salvation, immortality, joy, acceptance, healing, grace, redemption, etc. And the lack of clear goals and metrics makes it difficult to know when we're succeeding. We don't know how to be good at being spiritual. May I offer a metric that I found to be very helpful when it comes to measuring my own sense of spirituality? That metric is joy. And joy is a hard metric for us to associate with spirituality, because sometimes children might have been raised with that spirituality involves sacrifice, suffering, and sometimes it might. But our path to a spiritual growth is often difficult. It involves looking in the mirror and accepting what we see and developing habits that can aid us to create the life we want. Through all that, we can experience joy. The joy of curiosity, of the joy of exploration, the joy of insight, the joy of courage, the joy of self-love, of true acceptance of who we are. This unreasonable joy isn't free from pain. Instead, it's knowing that we are free to experience joy within the pain. Joy isn't freedom from pain, it's the freedom to experience joy within the pain. And in our emotional bodies, joy comes from letting go. Emotional joy can come by connecting with others, by feeling seen and heard, from a tender hug in a moment of pain. You know, it's the sensation that I feel in my quiet moments when I think about the joy that I receive from serving all of you as your intern minister. In our spiritual bodies, joy is experienced through acceptance, stillness, and connection with the parts of us that are transcend. We sit, breathe, and allow ourselves to become aware of something beyond the whirling of our minds. We allow our thoughts and feelings to be what they are, while inviting a deeper, lasting joy in the form of nothing at all. This is sublime. This is unreasonable joy. This week, I invite you to explore the role of spirituality in your life. Ask yourself the question, what is my spiritual metric? If you find that the metric is in alignment with the joy, peace, and love you're looking for in your life, examine the parts of your spiritual life that may need altering. Like the Radio Shook ad, give yourself the freedom to mix and match until your spiritual practice contains the components that you desire in your life. Spirituality is a path by which we learn to love and accept ourselves as we grow. Breathe deeply and allow yourself that gift with unreasonable and lasting joy. I challenge all of you to decide to become a spiritual entrepreneur. Begin to think big. Dream of what could be, not what is. Choose to see abundance, not scarcity. Adopt the attitude of, I don't know how, but I'm going to do it. Lastly, start by thinking vision first and resources second. I believe that if there's one thing that our church and the world needs today, is spiritual entrepreneurs. What we need is a new generation of individuals who forge out in new directions, who are willing to experiment boldly, dare greatly, and who will take their talents and energy and commitment to making the world a better place to be. Become today a spiritual entrepreneur. May it be so.
The purpose of the church is to encourage all who gather here to grow more generous in spirit and in action. This is the great end of all the world's faith traditions, to bring the human being closer to the divine by acts of creation and compassion. We now take an offering that allows us to exercise that all-important generosity of spirit, an offering that will support this self-supporting church and its many ministries. The gifts of the congregation will be most gratefully received.
I stand for love, I stand for peace. I stand for joy and for release. For what is beautiful and true. I stand for hope. I stand for you. I stand for love. I stand for peace. I stand for joy and for release. What is beautiful and true? I stand for hope. I stand for you. You know our world is in great pain. She needs our loving care again. But there are those who fail to see what we have done. And what we need, there is a cost for every act, and now there is no turning back. We burn a bridge, we beat, bang a drum. It's time to rise, the time has come to stand for love. To stand for peace, to stand for joy and for release. For what is beautiful and true. To stand for hope, stand for you. If you're thinking it's not urgent, that we've got more time to kill. If I'm not the one who'll change things, then for heaven's sake, who will? So I will move and I will climb that mountain one step at a time. I won't be swayed, I will not stop until we've made it to the top, where we will stand for love and peace. We'll stand for joy and for release, for what is beautiful and true. We'll stand for hope. We'll stand for you. I stand for love. I stand for peace. I stand for joy and for release. For what is beautiful and true. I stand for hope. I stand for you.
To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bodies, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go, to let it go.
I'm struck by that line in Broken Line. If you were here last week, you know we tried to form one. We're going to try again. And that means holding hands courageously, boldly, and confidently. And if you really have a problem with that, link elbows or something cool like that. And this is one way we get connected and stay connected. And we also remember it's one way we take care of community is to wash our hands often.
Help us to know that before our eyes lies the beauty we seek to feel astounded. Help us to lift our heads high enough to be aware of the vastness of our sky and of our spirit, and help us to know that within our hearts lie the love we need to complete the circle of spiritual connection in our lives. Amen. Go in peace.